Good afternoon. Get the headphones untangled from the underbeneath of the stool. The old underbeneath strikes again. Oh, my name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff, and I'm not underbeneath. Our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere ag and turf dealer. Pape has got everything you need when it comes to John Deere. Give them a call. Their phone number is 530-226-9226. And they're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in the city of Shasta Lake. And if you need parts, service, anything, give them a call. They work on all brands. Or you can catch them on the web at PapeMachinery.com.
And if you want to call and just ask a bunch of annoying questions and see if you can fix your tractor over the phone, I hear you asked for some guy named Bill.
Yeah. And he's good for that until about 1 o'clock in the afternoon. After that, gets a little surly. The guy, I don't know what his problem is. But,
and we also want those test drives out back with the tractors.
That's right. And there is a big hole back there. So, you know, if you get out of line, we'll just push you in there.
Oh, my goodness. The fun never ends. So, let's see, what is today? Today is March 5th, 2023, because I'm sure we will replay this at some point in the future, because this goes into our pot tab. So at wethepeopleradio.us, there is a tab labeled pot, you know, like marijuana, but it's shorter, so it fits better. The old marijuana tab. So anyway, all the shows about that, links to helpful things, things that our guests have sent us, websites that are useful, and we're kind of all about the information on what's really going on with that industry, whether it's the cartels, the crime, the medical implications. And so while I'm saying that, I'm going to...
You have a medical...
I'm going to click on it here.
Oh. Okay,
I thought maybe you had it right now.
Medical implication.
No medical implication. Okay. But I was gonna spoiler alert a few shows that we're doing in the future. And Officer Joe is here with us today to decode some of this. Okay, so you fill in the blanks because you know the players for me. So the next person that we'll be talking to after we speak with Bart Bright today, and I'll introduce him in 5 seconds. So we're talking about that. Then we move to marijuana medicine or myth. We have Dr. Ken Finn. So he's the founder of the International Academy on the Science and Impact of Cannabis. Isaac.
That's correct. And Ken and I have presented to cannabis boards across the United States, and our listeners are going to get to hear one of the foremost experts on marijuana and addiction. He is a pain specialist in Colorado and an emergency room physician. And that website for the International Association has the best library, I think, in the United States for anyone that's interested in information on cannabis.
Nice. So
cool.
WeThePeopleRadio.us, you click on the pot tab, and that is on there for you.
Yep. Not just a talking head. He is an expert.
He is the guy. So yeah. We'll have a commercial-free archive we do for all of our shows. They're MP3 files. You can download them. You can burn them to CDs. You could sell them to raise money for your group. We don't care what you do with them. We do the show as a benefit for the public. So the week after that, we have Dr. Bertha Madras, and I have that titled Psychological Effects of Marijuana, and she is amazing.
And Dr. Madras will tell us all about the addiction complex, and she is doing some of the cutting-edge research in the United States, National Institutes of Health, National Drug Policy. She's been there and done it all, and I think she speaks at a level normally above us normal people.
Well, she's a professor of psychobiology at Harvard Medical School.
Yes, but she is...
Mic drop.
she is fascinating, and we will learn a lot from her.
That's great.
So, you know, we're endeavoring to bring you not opinion, you know, because our opinions... Well, you already know our opinions. we try not to make it about our opinions. We want to make it about facts so that you can do something with that. But one of the big issues that I think is definitely underreported and definitely underconsidered as our communities, you know, for the people who think, oh man, they're talking about pot again. I guess I should go through my little spiel on that. Yeah, because it's affecting all of us. If you live in a rural area, there's probably a cartel growing something near you or driving on your roadways, hauling it to a point near you. If you're a parent, you have a kid who may be involved in this, and you, and they don't have to be, a creepy stand on the corner drug dealer to be involved in this. I mean, it might be they go to a party and vape this or do some kind of dabbing or something like that and completely have, I mean, it has the ability to completely alter your mind.
Mental break. Yeah.
So you've got that. You've got the long-term use and the things of that. It's not just kids. It's grown-ups. It's kind of everywhere. And the thing is, so let's just say you don't know any kids. You don't have any grown-up friends. You don't live in a rural area. You live in a townhouse somewhere and you never have any contact with this whatsoever. Well, guess what? Your tax dollars are going to go to pay for all this.
And we know that when it comes to dispensaries, that we're spending now $4 for every dollar that a dispensary takes in hidden costs to the citizens. And that's youth addiction, lost employee, work productivity,
related crime, sure.
all of that. Now it's important for people here locally who are listening here in Shasta County, think about looking east today and looking at Mill Creek subdivision, which is up in the Round Mountain area. That's an entire subdivision that's been bulldozed and the trees have been cut down and marijuana grows up there. And for anybody that hasn't been up there, it's absolutely third world country. It was like my time in Haiti, where all the pollution and everything is dumped into the creek there, and all that creek flows down, all that pollution, all the chemicals from the marijuana production flow into that creek, flow into Cow Creek, flow into Bella Vista Water Districts, and it concerns Bella Vista enough that they're having us want to try to address that with them this year. And the sheriff has been doing eradication up there, and this year we're gonna spank that place hard and try to reduce the actual danger to the citizens right here in Shasta County.
Yeah, you have the environmental damage.
Oh, yeah.
Up north, I mean, they're killing and eating dogs on the big cartel grows up there. And so maybe, again, you don't figure that has anything to do with you.
Until your dog disappears.
Well, I would tell you to go to the art pot page, go and scroll down, and there are a lot of pictures. So you don't have to take our word for it. Just go look at the pictures. And I took a bunch of them. So I was there.
I just sent out the email on Smokey the Owl, who is dying because of eating rodents from the grows there.
Who are poisoned with rodenticides and all the rest of it.
And are killing Smokey
the Owl. Well, look at the school up there. Was it Grenada? Grenada School?
Yep.
With the little kid who, a 5-year-old, came in contact with fentanyl on a playground. It must have been on a playground equipment or something like that. So, it's everywhere. It's everywhere, and this is what's bringing it. And deluding ourselves into thinking that this somehow has a benefit for our society. I'm really hoping we can educate you out of that. If that's kind of the way you're leaning, my guess is you haven't been doing a huge amount of research. So let's get Bart in here. Bart Bright, he was a camp counselor, a day camp director. Hey, I did those things. Hi, Bart. And a teacher for many years. He earned his bachelor's degree in recreation from San Francisco State and a teaching credential from Chapman University. He is retired back in 2019, and he lives in Northern California. He's the president of Maranon, and the website is MAR-ANON.com, and I had that linked on here. So, Maranon Family Groups, they're fellowships of those negatively affected by another person's marijuana use. So, for all you people who think it's not coming for you, potentially you do wind up touched by this. I hope you don't. I mean, I hope you don't. I hope you just tell a friend and it never intersects your life. So, Bart, I don't know where you would like to start, but it's all you, buddy.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for having me, and I can't disagree with anything the two of you have said since the start of the radio show this morning or today. I have a story. It's a sad story. not only about myself, but about my son. So before, you know, people think the whole thing's going to be, you know, sad and tragic, I would like to, you know, kind of try to, you know, have some levity here, because one of the things I have learned from, you know, this Marinon program that I'm the president of is that, you know, instead of thinking all or nothing, it's good to try to, you know, take, you know, the good with the bad, and also a lot of times there's all this stuff in the middle that, you know, we'll miss if we're, you know, either thinking everything's all great or everything's all bad. So, on the you know, I guess more recreational side, because I have a degree in recreation and leisure studies, believe it or not. So when I was in college, I my roommates and I, we grew a pot plant in our closet, and we had a harvest party. And so, at the time,
for the closet pot plant,
with the closet pot plant, it was a big plant, and lots of you know, leaves on it, and quite a few buds, and all that stuff. And so we had this big harvest party in the apartment. And so this was in Crown Colony in Daly City. We were going to San Francisco State for our senior year. And so, the reason I want to bring this up is that, I thought it was harmless, and I thought it was just all fun and games. And back then, of course, this is the 1970s, you know, it averaged probably anywhere from 2 to 5%. Maybe if you've got the really, really good stuff, you're talking, you know, probably, you know, close to 5%. This stuff from our closet that we grew was probably closer to 2%. So, but we had a lot of it. So we had this party. And the Allman Brothers, we were playing a lot of music, and the Allman Brothers came on, and I said, okay, let's all turn off the lights, and but you know, everybody get a light switch. And let's have a light show while you know, music is going on. And so while we're this great music's going on, Allman Brothers, I forget the song, but anyway, the lights are going on and off, and it's just really fun, really cool, all these people, you know, stoned. And and we hear this, and I'm like, what's that all about? And so I go to where the sound is, and this girl, she's got the garbage disposal switch. She's so stoned that she thinks that she's turning on and off the light that she's looking at, and it has no correlation to the switch. And so, anyway, you know, that was probably the most fun I ever had, being stoned and all that. And I was the most popular person, of course, in the apartment complex after that. But, you know, so that was the fun and games part of it. And, and then I was also in a club that, we believed it was at San Francisco State University in the 1970s. And we, one of the things our club believed is that marijuana should be legal. So we got this guy named Dennis Perrone, who was big time in the pot, you know, business back then. In fact, he had what he called a pot supermarket at his house in San Francisco. And this is where, you know, you would get obviously put in jail back then for selling it. Not necessarily using it, but definitely for selling it. And we had him come and speak at the student union. We had about 100 people show up, and we were passing out free joints in front of the student union. And he was a real big proponent of medical marijuana. And so, again, at the time, I just thought, it was all fun and games, and it was all harmless. Well, fast forward, I get married, have kids, and my youngest son, he started using it when he was 15. And but once we found out he was using it, we talked to him about it, and it's a long story, but long story short, he would go to rehabs, and unfortunately, especially back then, even the rehabs would say, oh, no, you can't get addicted to pot, you know. And so so he said he felt kind of silly in the rehab, because people in the rehabs are like, I'm here for heroin or cocaine. You're just here for pot. You know, pot's nothing, you know. So anyway, he would actually get sober. He'd have times of sober, being sober, and then he would go back. And it was difficult, to say the least. And then he got to a point where he started having episodes of a thing called cannabis-induced psychosis. So it's THC-induced psychosis. And I thought he was having, I thought he had schizophrenia. But actually, it's in the DSM-5. It's a medical diagnosis. And he eventually, it's hard to say, of course, but he eventually took his life and died by suicide on August 14th, 2018. So that's kind of from the fun, happy, you know, crazy stuff to the devastating stuff.
Yeah, big difference. That's also an excellent illustration of the 70s till now. You know, that what has happened between there and here. And unfortunately, a lot of the people making decisions about whether or not we're going to have, you know, dispensaries or commercial growing or all that in our communities are people who are the age of all of us who were, growing up in the 70s. And and that's where their marijuana knowledge ends. The 2% THC. Well, it's harmless. Nobody ever got hooked on it. Never hurt anybody. It's better, you know. It's better for them than alcohol. And it's like, hot news.
Maybe the 2% is, but not the stuff today.
Yeah, hot news flash. Things have changed. We we've got to take a really quick break. We'll be back with our guest, Bart Bright. Easy for me to say. Got all ahead of myself there. And you can find us at WePeopleRadio.us. Love that song. Okay, play it again. No, I'm kidding. All right.
Play it four more times.
You got a question for Bart.
Hey, Bart, it's Officer Joe. First of all, did I make you paranoid in the 1970s when I had those red and blue lights? Just want to know. I mean, I had to ask. You know,
outside, that's true. You guys were on different teams back then.
Yeah, we were on different teams back then.
You were freaking me out, man.
If I was outside your party, would that have bothered you at all?
Well, yeah, it's interesting because it was in San Francisco, and in the 70s in San Francisco, again, I think, you know, I don't know if anyone got arrested for using, but I know, you know, I think some people got arrested. In fact, that guy, Dennis Perone, he got arrested quite a bit for selling.
Yeah, and you know what, Bart, we did not write tickets for marijuana possession. You had to fail the police test to get a ticket for marijuana. I mean, you really had to be a jerk to get a ticket for marijuana. But
exactly.
Somebody who was selling or transporting, yeah, we'd go after them. So I'm interested, Bart, because you have this huge personal tragedy in your life of your son, who committed suicide, and that unfortunately is a story that we hear all too often today from high potency THC dependency. How did you, in the 1970s, what was the process in your mind that brought you to sobriety? And when I think about that and I look at the first of the 12 steps of Maranon, where it says, we were admitted we were powerless over marijuana, that our lives had become unmanageable. Did you ever feel that, or did you just naturally, through age and becoming a parent, say, you know what, marijuana use isn't going to be in my life anymore? How did that work for you?
Oh, yeah, good question. That's a really long story, which we don't have time for, but in a nutshell...
We got 2 hours.
We got time.
Okay, so what happened was my wife, she was my girlfriend at the time, we moved in together in the marina in San Francisco in this little... junk place, junky place, which was fine. But anyway, we moved there, and then she thought it'd be good for our relationship, and she took off for 11 weeks by herself to Europe, to a backpacking trip to see if when she came back, we were ready to get married or whatever. So while she was gone, I definitely fell into a depression, by myself a lot, and I'm sure... In fact, I know the pot smoking made it worse. So I was lonely and all that, but with the pot smoking, the more pot I smoked, the more depressed I got. And so I remember having this bud from Humboldt, and it was expensive at the time. I didn't really have much money, but I was basically a pothead.
That's where my roommates were your suppliers.
Yeah, exactly. I was a pothead, and this was, Synthamine, this really good stuff. And I remember flushing it down the toilet. So I had hardly any money, and here I flushed this really, bud that was really, really very sought after with us potheads. I flushed it down the toilet. And so I obviously at that time I realized that it was making my depression worse. And overall, it was kind of like when I get high, I would take one step forward and feel better for a while. And then as I came down off the high, I'd feel worse. So it was like taking one step forward and two steps back. And I think that's why a lot of people think, it is medicine because it makes me feel better. Well, yeah, it can make you feel better at first. And again, if you don't have any kind of, addiction in your family tree, if you're not don't have an addictive personality, and you just do it here and there, that's one thing. But there's a lot of people who do get addicted to the THC, and even though they take one step forward and two steps back, it's like the next day, they might say, I'm not going to do this again. And the next day they do the same thing and thinking, at least I'm going to feel better. And then it's almost like they forget because they have that addictive personality and maybe that addiction in their past. So what happened was she came back from Europe. Again, we still smoked pot together sometimes and still smoked pot. But then I eventually actually transferred, instead of my drug of choice being pot, it transferred to alcohol. And then, again, many years later, I realized I was an alcoholic. Well, I think more than anything, I have an addictive personality, and I do have some addiction in my family tree. My oldest brother had a cousin who was an alcoholic and all that. So, you can really just take that that part of addiction, and you can put in, THC. You can take that out. You can put alcohol. You can take that out. You can put cocaine, whatever. But anyway, there's millions of people like me who are susceptible to addiction.
And about one in seven of our youth are at vastly higher rates of suicide when they use high potency THC. And about I think it's high as like 15% of the population, which already has psychological or psychiatric problems, that uses cannabis, that has vastly greater thoughts of suicide and vastly greater thoughts of self harm. So. That's yeah. The national statistics. Do you agree with those?
Oh, no question. So you probably have it handier than I do, but there's a with the Department of Health in Colorado. What they did is they took the blood of 15 to 19-year-olds after completed suicides. And this is relatively recent, a few years ago. And they found that 32% of the 15 to 19-year-olds that died by suicide, about 32% had THC in their blood. And the next drug down at, I think it was 11% in second place, I think was antidepressants or alcohol. But anyway, but the point is that by far the drug that they had in their system by far was THC.
And, you know, Bart, since we are talking about suicide, I do want to remind everybody today and in the public that if you have thoughts of harming yourself, or if you know someone that is struggling with drug addiction or psychological problems, remember, help is available, and they can always call the National Suicide and Crisis Lifeline, and that is a three-digit number now, 988. And you can dial that at 988lifeline.org, and that will get you help nationally. So, Bart, let's go into and let's talk about Marinon a little bit. And tell me, how did that, you know, this was a cathartic event for you, and, you know, your son has now died. You're probably, and you'll tell us, you're probably searching for, you know, meaning. And so how did Marinon come because of your son's suicide?
Oh, yeah, no question. So, when he died August 14th in 2018, I medicated, tried to make myself feel better by drinking. And I've never gotten a DUI, and in general, I think a lot of people, in fact, I know my friends would say, oh, you're not an alcoholic. Yeah, you drink too much at parties sometimes, but you're not an alcoholic. Well, if I wasn't before, again, then I definitely was, I never drank in the morning or anything, but once my son passed away, then I started sneaking the alcohol a lot more, and long story short, it got to a point where I was either going to drink myself to death or get my act together. And so I decided to get my act together, and I started going to Alcoholics Anonymous and working the 12 steps in Alcoholics Anonymous. And then I was doing a bunch of research on marijuana because I wanted to see what I could do to try to prevent this kind of thing from happening to other families. And I found this thing called Marinon on the website, on the internet. It was October of 2020. So I thought, oh, wow, that's great. Now, you got to remember, it's COVID time. So during COVID, there were no in-person meetings. So I emailed sent an email to somebody on that site. And little did I know, there was only one volunteer left keeping the site going. And I said, oh, where are your meetings? And she said, oh, well, we don't have any meetings. And so I emailed back. I said, can I start Zoom meeting? And she's like, yeah, that'd be great. So at that time, there was only like an email chain, I think about 100 people or so. That was October of 2020, and now we have over 1,200 members. We have 7 meetings a week, and so if you go to marinon.com, marinon.com, and look at under meetings, you'll find where our meetings are. So anyway, we started that, and it's incredible how many parents and also spouses get on that meeting for the first time, the Zoom meetings, and say, finally. You know, people who understand. You know, I go to my friends or my family members, my neighbors, and tell them, you know, my son's smoking too much pot, or my husband's using too much, and they laugh at me and they say, "Oh no, that's medicine. That's natural." So they really find a place where they get a lot of support.
And your son, do you mind if I say his name?
It's fine.
Okay, so your son Kevin, you said he was 15 when he started abusing marijuana. And if people want to read about Kevin's stories, they can go on MomStrong at momstrong.org.
And I have that all on page 2.
Oh, great. So Aaron's already got that up. So, Bart, then what happened? First of all, this is a pretty large organization. You have a pretty large group of people now, don't you? I mean, it's like 1,000.
Yeah, we're about about 1,250 now. We average about one or two new members a day.
And where are they from?
All over the country.
Oh, yeah. So this is a national website. They can go on and they can Zoom with you. And do you hear stories similar to...
The fact that one or two people, you know, that you have that steady of an influx of people who are being hit by this. That should speak volumes.
It's just the basics are the same. The details are different. So, like I say, over and over and over they get, and a lot of them are crying, saying, finally, you know, find people who understand. I have found a group of people who understand. And so it's basically for people who know Al-Anon, which Al-Anon is for loved ones of alcoholics, this is basically the marijuana version of Al-Anon. We use Al-Anon literature because, again, we're still so new. And we just, whenever we come up to the word alcohol, we just switch it and say marijuana.
Now, there is a spiritual aspect to your program. I don't read God, but I do. I do in your 12 steps. I do read that people want that one of the precepts is that you've had a spiritual awakening as a result of all the other steps, and you want to carry that message to your family and friends of marijuana addicts, and practice all the 12 steps of Marinon.
And right.
As you speak today too, Bart, I'll give them out so people can understand what you're talking about, if you'd like.
Oh well, can I give a few more minutes before commercial to kind of explain about the 12 steps?
Yeah, we got 30 seconds or so.
We can start with the 30 seconds.
I'll wait till we come back, just because.
Yeah, so it's all in the same.
Long story short, it's an incredible story. Dr. Bob and Bill W. started Alcoholics Anonymous in 1935, and it was the first 12-step program. And I'd like to give a quick summary of it after the...
God, I had no idea. 1935?
Yeah, 1935, and millions and millions, tens of millions of people have been helped by 12-step programs since 1935.
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't even take the bet that you couldn't walk out the door and throw a rock and hit somebody who's been affected by, you know, or knows somebody who has been through the 12-step program. I mean, everybody knows what that means.
A really common statement that your son said to you that we have heard from other parents is, before they committed suicide, they go to the parents and they go, marijuana has ruined my life.
Yeah, he said his last articulate words to me were, cannabis has ruined my life.
But we better get more dispensaries so that we can improve our community.
Yeah. I mean, again, it's basically a replay of what happened with Big Tobacco, but even worse.
Yeah, and the science is doing the exact same thing, because now we're lying about how it's, you know, good for you and blah, 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 and has medical benefit, blah, 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 and doesn't cause cancer, blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
Exactly.
We're not learners, are we?
my brain is full.
Yeah. Societally, we are hardcore recidivists. We will be right back. Our guest is Bart Bright. He is with Marinon, actually. And you can find all his information at wethepeopleradio.us. That my college days were a musical, that would be the theme song.
You could switch that around to Hey Bud Tender.
Anne Hassel sings that song.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Okay, so back to the origins but it was Al-Anon.
Al-Anon, okay.
Back in Alcoholics Anonymous back in 1935. Who knew?
Yeah, so anyway, Dr. Bob and Bill W. were, again, raging alcoholics, and they eventually, again, it's a long story, but they started Alcoholics Anonymous in 1935, and it was just guys at the time, and I think they were either all married or almost all married, and so they're, you know, helping other alcoholics, and I think they got up to, who knows, you see, by 1951, and I'm sure they had thousands of members. And so the wives were around, you know, together sometimes, and then they started realizing, wait, you know, we need a program to support us also. Because, you know, we're living with these, you know, alcoholics. And so they started Al-Anon. And most people with Al-Anon and with Maranon, and there's all these other, you know, like Nar-Anon, which is loved ones of people who take narcotics. Anyway, but for the most part, most of the people are tend to be codependent. They have codependency. And so a lot of it is learning how not to be codependent and learning how not to enable the loved one who's addicted, or whether they're still using or not using. And even some of my people might be confused with that. It's like, wait, why do you need a program of support if they're not using? Well, most everybody uses or overuses because they're masking you know, some problems that they have, and they're trying to feel better. So if they just stop using the drug, whether it's alcohol or marijuana or any other drug, then and they don't try to work on themselves through going to a 12-step program like Alcoholics Anonymous or Marijuana Anonymous or some of those other 12-step programs, then the underlying issues that cause them to overuse in the first place they don't take care of it. They don't get healthier on a emotional and mental level. So what happens is it's a term called a dry drunk. And so, yeah, they're not using, but their behavior is the same and sometimes worse because they have resentments and they're all pissed off because they can't use, you know. And so that's why people who have addiction issues what I decided to do, and a lot of people decided to do it, again, tens of millions of people over since 1935, to either go to a 12-step program and get help and to work on your issues and all that, and to get healthier, or, you know, have a really good therapist or be in some kind of really good program to help you. And then I guess one of the other things I wanted to say is that you have Alcoholics Anonymous that started in 1935, and then Al-Anon started for the loved ones of alcoholics. And then down the road, Marijuana Anonymous started. So that was the marijuana version. And stay with me now. Marijuana version of Alcoholics Anonymous, because it's marijuana and not alcohol. And then eventually Maranon started, the loved ones of people who are using too much pot.
And so, Bart, is it similar to Alcoholics Anonymous, where I know you're doing this via Zoom, but everybody does tells their story and does a round robin?
Yeah. So you don't have to talk, and that's one thing I want to make clear to everybody. You could just go onto the meeting, you know, so go to our website, go to the meeting section, and you just go onto a meeting. You don't have to have your camera on. You can have your mic off. And don't have to say anything, just listen the whole time. And that way you can see, because, you know, a lot of people are showing their, you know, they have their camera on, but some people don't have it on. And so you can just listen and watch and see what it's all about. And one of the things we have is take what you like and leave the rest. So, you know, in a one-hour meeting, you're probably going to hear some stuff and have some aha moment and go, oh, yeah, I'm in a similar situation or I've had similar feelings. And then other things you may not relate to, and that's fine. So that's why we say take what you like and leave the rest.
Do you use professional medical personnel as facilitators or just trained personnel or people like you that have come up through the process of grieving and enlightenment? How does that work as far as who?
Yeah, I wouldn't go that far. I'm not that enlightened. But anyway, but I would say that because of all, it's called learning the hard way, and reading a bunch of literature, going to a bunch of meetings. After you finish step 12, and actually part of step 12, a big part of it, is helping others. And so that's what we do, and that's why there's over 100 12-step programs. There's 12-step programs for people who have gambling addiction, shopping addiction, eating addictions, and there's, and it's because of that. So to answer your question, there's no professional that is in the meetings that is like a therapist. However, and that's why we don't tell anybody what they should do. We don't shit on people. We say what works for us. And so there's no crosstalk during the meeting, and so I just speak my truth, usually about 3 minutes, and up to 3 minutes if you want. You don't have to share if you don't want to, and I just speak my truth and talk about what's going on with me, and it is good to maybe think of one or two things that is helping. I like to say, like with me, I try to let people know about one or two things that is helping me. You know, like for me, I play tennis, I go to the gym and exercise, I try to eat healthy, I try to, do stuff that's fun, travel, et cetera, et cetera. And that helps me deal with my issues, especially my codependency issues. And that's what we do. And no one goes, you should try this, or you should try that, if you want to talk to people afterwards, you share your phone number, and you can talk to them afterwards, and then that's when you can say, well, this is what has worked for me, and you can kind of have it back and forth. But during the 12-step meeting, it's just a one-way. We call it no crosstalk.
So step two came to believe that a high power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Step three made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of a higher power. And step four.
Yeah, so if I could stop you right there, Joe, real quick.
Yep.
So the summary of the three steps for me, again, everybody's different, but for me, first step, I can't do it by myself. You know? The second step, a higher power can help me. It doesn't, some people call it God, some people call it the higher power. Some people call it the group, okay? And so step one, I can't do it by myself. This is like the shorthand or the summary of the first three steps for me. Number one, I can't do it by myself. Number two, my higher power can help me. Number three, I will let my higher power help me.
Step four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Now, that's tough to do.
I would imagine that's a little bit of a process.
Yeah, that's a process for people.
Yeah, and what happened with me is I was so focused on my son's use, and so I started going to Al-Anon, even though it was primarily pot, marijuana. I started going to Al-Anon because I didn't know about marijuana, and that was like almost 14 years ago. And then one day I was just sitting in the car waiting for an Al-Anon meeting, and it was a trip. I kind of was imagining seeing my son through the window of the car, right in the car, and then that window in my imagination turned into a mirror, and I saw myself, and I saw an image of myself, and I thought, okay, I need to start working on myself. It's just not all him.
Yeah, that's got to be a, I would imagine in that process, you circle back to that a bunch of times. I mean, that isn't like check the step and move on. It's more like, oh yeah, I forgot some things, go back.
Oh, no question. In fact, I've done the steps now 3 times, and I sponsor other people and help them. In fact, that's what you do. You get a sponsor in a program who's been in the program and done the steps to help you go through the steps. And another thing I really like, this was a few years ago, we go to the meetings to share our experience, strength, and hope, especially our strength and hope, and we use a sponsor to work through our issues, our problems.
What a great spot for somebody who decided to spend their adult life being a teacher. I mean, that it's kind of a sad reason to transition your teaching skills, but a really positive use of something that you were passionate about and that you were where your talent lies.
Well, thank you. Yeah. So, if anybody had told me when my kids were little, if I was going to be able to have a happy, successful life and have a fulfilled life if my son died by suicide, I would ask them, where are they smoking?
Yeah.
But actually, I do. And the reason is because I have a lot of people who understand me, support me, and love me, just like I love and understand and support them. And anyways, it's been basically a miracle in my life.
Oh, I'm sure. There's nothing worse than having something that... there's a lot of things that people have and they think they're the only one. They know they're not,
right.
But you feel like you're the only one. And it's kind of like the deep, dark, personal or family secret. And you just carry it around like a giant sack of horribleness on your back all day. It's gotta help with all of that. And then for the other people that are thinking they're alone, you're like, hey, surprise. This is more common than you think.
Right, and most everybody feels better when they help others.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, no matter what it is, helping someone across the street, or most people feel better, and that's what happens is makes us feel better when we're helping others, and also looking in the mirror and saying, okay, what do I need to work on, to take care of my side of the street. And one of the best things I like from Alcoholics Anonymous is you're as sick as your secrets.
Ooh, yeah, that's got to hit home. Well, surprised isn't really the right word, but
I've got the question.
I'm like, do they? Because I'm sure there are tons of people in there who have not lost their children.
Of course, most haven't.
Right,
and that's why I tell people I'll talk to Rotary groups and other groups about this stuff.
Hey, by the way, this is a possibility, and are people shocked by that?
Yeah, they're shocked by it, but I make sure that it kind of I think goes over their head because they probably are thinking the same thing I thought when I was at a PTA meeting, Parent Teachers Association meeting, when my kid was when Kevin was in elementary school, and one of the parents got up and said, "We have a drug problem in our small town," and I thought to myself, "No, we don't." And I didn't say anything, but I thought to myself, "No, we don't." And I said, "And besides, even if we did, that will never happen to my kids." So I think when I give these talks, that there's people out there, and probably out there in your radio audience, that think, "No, it's never going to happen to my kids or my grandkids." And unfortunately, I was wrong.
That's a terrible, terrible realization. And it's nice that maybe you can pull somebody out before they have to learn about that in a personal way. We have to take a break for the news, but we'll be back with our guest, Bart Bright. And here's 1932, Cab Calloway. So right around the time Alcoholics Anonymous was getting started.
Watermelon pickle, then you know you're talking to that reaper man. Have you ever met one reaper man? You want to give you Pennsylvania, and you know you're talking to the Reaper Man.